This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Today we move ahead with our series on African Americans in the military and take a look at one of the most profound changes in who serves our nation. In the year of these September 11th attacks, African Americans made up 23% of active Army recruits. Since then, that figure has dropped dramatically. This year it hovers near 15%. African-American enlistment has dropped faster than any other demographic group. So is the Army trying to reclaim its place as a pathway to the good life for Black folks? Is it taking less qualified recruits in order to fill the gap? In a moment, we'll speak with Thomas P. Bostic. He's commanding general of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command. But first, we've got Joseph Williams. He's the deputy bureau chief in Washington for the Boston Globe, and he recently reported on this story. Hi.
Hi.
So you talked to young Black men who were thinking of signing up for the Army but didn't. What reasons did they give?
They said a lot of reasons. The first and foremost was the Iraq War. A large segment of the African-American population in the country is against it. Young Black people were no exception. They felt like this was not their war. It was not theirs to fight. They didn't really give much credence to the Army's bonuses and all the enlistment incentives that they're offering, and they just feel like it's not a fight for them, and that they have enough problems trying to get ahead in society as it is.
In Vietnam, a lot of African Americans were killed and on the front lines. Is it true that African Americans now are placed on the front lines?
That was a perception that we were getting quite a bit, and it turns out that the perception is not necessarily true. The statistics we found indicated that African American recruits were more likely to go into the service segment of the Army, quartermaster corps, motor pool, fixing and repairing the heavy machinery, than they were to actually be given a rifle and sent to the front lines as cannon fodder, which is a perception that keeps lingering from the Vietnam War.
So Baltimore has its share of street crime. How did the young men, and you talked to a woman also, really feel about the streets as compared to the Army?
They felt that the streets were their war. They felt like the notion of joining the service and possibly risking their lives in Iraq or Afghanistan was a double risk, given the fact that they're trying to get by on their own on the streets. In Baltimore, there were nearly 300 homicides so far this year. They felt like this was a war that the government needed to pay attention to, was the fight for survival among young Black men and women in the inner city, rather than waste effort going over to Iraq and Afghanistan for a cause that they didn't really believe in.
Now, the Air Force, Marines, and Navy aren't experiencing the same level of drop-off. Why do you think that is?
The statistics and the people that we talked to said that, number one, the Army is bearing the brunt of the combat operations in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And when you turn on the news, you see U.S. Army soldiers coming back wounded. You see U.S. Army soldiers being killed in IED attacks. You don't see Air Force pilots or Air Force technicians, because they've always had a reputation as being the more technical branch of the service rather than the gung-ho, heavy-lifting sort of branch that the Army and, to a smaller extent, the Marine Corps does. The Marine Corps has not experienced such a drop because they've had the reputation of being the proud and the few, and their numbers are close to a third the size of the Army. So the Army really is the major tool when it comes to combat. And the Navy and the Air Force and even the Coast Guard are having to turn people away because they do offer the same sort of incentives, they do have the same educational program, and they are ways for African-American people to get ahead, but just not with such a high likelihood of combat.
We are going to talk to a major general in a second, but the Army says that, yes, certain groups are losing interest in joining, but they've also exceeded recruitment quotas for fiscal year 2007. So how does that work out?
Basically, what they've been doing is getting a larger share of recruits from more rural areas. Say places, small towns 10 to 15 miles outside of city limits, the exurbs, where people are more likely to be looking for economic opportunity and more willing to take the risk that they might see combat or at least be in a combat theater. And also they're getting more white recruits, more young white men and women who are more patriotic and who might believe in the war a lot more than inner city African-American youth or people who are more close to that sort of an area would be. They're getting smaller towns, exurbs. They're also granting a lot more waivers than they had before, which means they'll allow people in even though they might not necessarily meet fitness requirements, that is, have a criminal record, be in good condition, or pass certain exams that the Army requires for entrance.
Now, do you see the Army beefing up its campaign to recruit African Americans, or is it just going to continue with what you describe as a strategy to get more people from more rural areas?
They're going to try to do whatever they can because they need to fill the units. They're running at a deficit right now because of the war. They have a mandate to expand the force by some 65,000 troops by 2010, and that's going to take a push in every single area. What they're selling, however, is not anything that African American people are buying at this moment. They'll beef up their pitches. They've got a significant amount of recruiting money and a lot of incentive dollars on the table. But unless they find different ways to sell their message to the black community, it's not going to work.
So how does class factor into this?
Class is a major determiner because, as you mentioned, people have traditionally, African Americans have traditionally used the Army as a leg up. But because of the war and because it's been so widely unpopular and because of the notion that either you're going to be cannon fodder or you're going to be back in the rear with the gear, it's not for us. So class has really been kind of a struggle for the Army. They've not been getting the high-quality suburban recruits that they long for. They're concentrating their pitch for folks who are looking for economic opportunity, read more black people, but a fewer number of black people are willing to take that chance. There still are some. There still are quite a few in the recruiting stations. Mostly you'll see storefront stations in the neighborhood. You'll rarely see them by the upscale shopping mall. That's where they'll stay. That's where they are. That's where they'll stay. So they'll keep focusing on that group because they're the ones who are most likely to buy in, but it's going to continue to be a tough sell.
You also talked to a young woman who worked at Walter Reed for a while. Tell us how she felt.
Well, she felt largely the same way, that the Army, you know, she was seeing firsthand troops coming back, that it was a combat operation a lot of them didn't necessarily believe in, and it's a struggle to stay positive and to stay focused and feel good about the Army when you're seeing all this come in.
Well, Joe, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Joseph Williams is Deputy Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe's Washington Bureau. Now we've got Major General Thomas P. Bostick. He is Commanding General of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command. General, welcome.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Well, first off, tell me a little bit about yourself. You came from West Point. How old were you when you decided you wanted to be a soldier, and what motivated you?
My father was in the Army. He was an enlisted soldier for 26 and a half years. And as I finished high school and was looking for an opportunity for my own education and thinking through the different options, I applied for West Point and was accepted and decided to go there at 17 years old.
Now, West Point is elite. So give us a bit of background on how something like that might compare to Army recruits generally in terms of their education and family income.
Well, I wouldn't say, you know, West Point is elite. I mean, it's a great school. It's a great education. I had the opportunity to teach there in the engineering department. And we do, even at that academy, recruit from all over our country in all different sectors of our society. The same as we do in the enlisted force, that we are in the towns and cities across America. We're in all socioeconomic classes. We're very diversified. We're, in fact, underrepresented in the lowest and the highest 10% of the socioeconomic strata. We're largely middle class.
Now, as an African American, what does it mean to you to see the drop in black recruits? Does it trouble you personally?
Well, we want the Army to be representative of all ethnic groups throughout the country, and we currently are. As you look at the African American population in 2000, we enlisted at a rate of about 23% of all of our enlistment. About 23% was African American. Today, it's about 15%, and while that is a significant drop, 15% is about representative of the African American population at large. So we represent America. If that were to go lower, in fact, African Americans are about 14.5% of the country's population. We recruit, enlist at 15%. If that were to go much lower, certainly we would be very concerned. And it's now moving in the opposite direction. It's moving upward. That's what we want it to do. But we want to represent America in all ethnicities.
General, I'm thinking of the different marketing the Army has done. It's be all you can be and then Army of One. Now you see advertisements with young men talking to their parents and trying to convince their parents that they should enter the Army. Does this reflect a widespread problem of families actually urging young men and women not to go into the armed services?
Well, what we've seen is propensity to enlist is down for our young men and women across all ethnic groups, the 17 to 24-year-olds, it is down. A decade ago, if you asked how many would be willing to join, it would be much higher than it is today. Today, about 15%. A decade or more ago, it would be 20-25%. So there has been a decline in the propensity of the individual to join, but there's also been a decline in the influencers, the parents, the coaches, and the teachers, particularly in the parents. If you look at moms and dads in particular and look back 3 years ago, about 40% of the moms would recommend military service and 50% of the dads. Those numbers today, you're looking at 25% of the moms and about 33% of the fathers. So we do have to reach out to the moms and dads, and we have to talk about the opportunities of the Army and talk about what the Army does for our young men and women. It does make you strong. And when we talk about strong, it's a physical, it's a mental, it's an emotional strength, and we have a lot of opportunities. So the Army's not for everyone, but we think that we offer great opportunities for a great many young men and women to serve.
You mentioned the different kinds of strength it takes to be in the Army, but the Army has been changing its requirements. I'm talking about physical fitness, criminal background check requirements. What is the Army doing in terms of that, and are you frankly lowering your standards?
Well, again, we represent society, and we look at things that have changed in society. For example, greater numbers of high school dropouts. High school diploma graduates are at about 70% across the country. Our goal is to achieve 90% high school diploma graduates. That's what the OSD, our Department of Defense, has set. That's what we have set. And we didn't achieve that goal last year. We came in at about 79%. And the other 20% were GEDs. They were all fully qualified. They passed the military test to come in. They were physically, mentally, and educationally inapt, and they passed in an aptitude fashion the test to come in. But we didn't meet that goal. Now, some may ask, well, why do you have that high school diploma graduate goal? And the goal was there because of a word called stick-to-itiveness. We thought that and had studies that showed that if you had a GED, you might not make it through basic training in AIT at the levels that we needed you to. Well, if you look at basic training in AIT, advanced individual training and the graduation rates, they've dropped. The attrition rate has dropped from 18% to 7%. So despite the fact that we're bringing in more soldiers that have not received their high school diploma, we're making sure through a whole person concept that person with the GED can make it through our training base, and they are in good numbers.
Now, our research shows that in October of this year, one in every five recruits needed a waiver in order to join. And one thing I've heard from some people who served and who actually had some influence at the top levels, what about the Army undermining itself over time? You talked with us frankly about some of the things that you're doing to try to attract more people. Is there a chance that the changing demographics of the Army, these changed standards, could actually undermine the performance over time?
Well, you know, I've served in combat with these soldiers. I deployed with the 1st Cavalry Division. We're very careful about those that we enlist in the Army. We want those that are going to come in and serve admirably and proudly, and when we give a waiver to an individual, we want to be convinced that they can meet the standard and they can serve their country. Now, when you say one out of five, it turns out 18% do need a waiver, and those waivers comprise of physical waivers. They could be moral waivers. They could be education. Aptitude, not a waiver, but we look at whether we're bringing in a GED or not. And the biggest concern is in the the moral waiver category. So if you get right down to it, in the area that folks are most concerned, those that have a felony conviction, out of the 107,000 that we brought in last year, less than 1%, about a half a percent, or under 600 of those actually had a felony conviction. Those with a felony conviction must be receive their waiver from a general officer. So either I will approve that waiver or my deputy. A general officer will look at that and say, this person deserves a second chance in life based on what they have done since they received that felony. The others are widely misdemeanors. The vast majority are misdemeanors. They're things that young children have gotten into trouble for. If you go to the FBI database, you will see that in the last 5 years, the increase in misdemeanors in criminal conduct and arrests has increased over 14% in the last 5 years. So
General,
we've seen this.
Very briefly, what is your plan to try to increase African American enlistment, if any?
Well, we look at all ethnic groups, and in that particular ethnic group, we will reach out to a number of different organizations, whether it's the 100 Black Men, and working with that organization. We go to the historically black colleges and universities. We work with our education affiliates, whether they're universities, high schools. We prepare different types of support kits so that we can provide the facts about what the Army offers. And we offer great education opportunities. We offer great leadership opportunities and great opportunities to serve your country. And we continue to do that on radio, television, and in the schools across America.
Well, General, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Major General Bostic is Commanding General for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command.